This episode of the Art of Manliness podcast is brought to you by the Art of Manliness store. If you're looking for a last-minute gift idea, check out our gift cards for the Art of Manliness store. You can buy them in denominations of $25, $50, $100, and $200. It gets emailed directly to your recipient. So, you know, Christmas Eve, you're looking for something for your brother, your best friend, whatever, just send them a gift card and they can go pick what they want in the Art of Manliness store. If you want a discount on your purchase, use the code PODCAST10 for 10% off at checkout. Again, that's store.artofmanliness.com. Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. So I know a lot of people think it's superficial, particularly guys, but the way we present ourselves to the world affects the influence that we have on others. It's not just the words that we say, but things like our body language, the clothes that we wear, the tone of our voice, all work together in personal influence. And so with that in mind, I mean, it would be in our interest to just put our best foot forward and present our best selves to the people we interact with for business pitches, speeches, lunch meetings, etc. I mean, we want to make sure that the message we have actually gets across to people because people give us a chance because we're presenting ourselves in the best way possible. Well, my guests say that's what she does for a living. She teaches and coaches executives, media personalities on how to put their best foot forward so they're more influential. Her name is Frances Cole Jones. She's the author of the book, How to Wow. And today on the podcast, we're going to talk about a bunch of tips, tactics, things you can do to present your best self to the world so you can be more influential in speeches, business meetings, job interviews, even first dates, right? So without further ado, Frances Cole Jones and How to Wow. Frances Cole Jones, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
So you've written a lot of books, content about self-presentation, public speaking, persuasion. But before we get into some of the things you've written about in your book, which one of them we're going to talk about today is How to Wow, which I absolutely love. Let's talk about a bit about your career and what you do, because it's interesting. How do you, I was trying to figure out how to describe what you do, your job description. How would you describe what you do as far as consulting and teaching people how to present them their best selves?
It really depends on the day, but that is it in a nutshell, is presenting your best self no matter what the situation. So some of my clients are going on television and they're talking about whatever it is that they're talking about, their product or their stock price. Some of my clients are, you know, people who are trying to get back into the workforce after having been out of the workforce for a few years. So it really depends. Every day is different, but what's really nice is that the principles are always the same. So no matter who you are or what you're doing, you can use this information.
Gotcha. And how do you answer the question? I'm a big believer in presenting your best self, but I'm sure there's some naysayers out there saying, this is all inauthentic. It's phony. You should just be yourself. And you know, all this, these little tactics you should do, like you shouldn't really worry about it. How do you respond to people who make those sort of, arguments?
I absolutely want you to be authentic. And if you're not, of course, people are going to pick up on that. But I think that even the naysayers will agree that they have days when they feel super articulate and powerful. And then they have days where they have trouble stringing a sentence together. So my goal is, you know, really that you would have a few tools on the days when perhaps you're not your best self, that you can pull these out and say, okay, I know that this is more helpful. I think it's, you know, it's really the verbal equivalent in many cases of just putting on a clean shirt.
I like that. I like that example. Great analogy. Because you don't want to go into any type of presentation with mustard or ketchup.
No, you know, just spruce yourself up a little bit.
Okay. So in your book, How to Wow, you start off the book talking about the three elements of influence in face-to-face contact. What are those three elements and what's their respective amount of importance in overall persuasion and presentation to other people?
Well, there is some controversy around this study. Nonetheless, I love it. It comes out of UCLA, and they said that there are three components of your message, verbal, vocal, and visual, that people actually only remember about 7% of what is said. 38% of your impact is your tonal quality, and 55% is what your body's doing while you're speaking. So with that in mind, what I do is, okay, let's make what you're going to be saying as memorable as possible, and let's organize your tonality and your physicality so that nothing detracts from what you're trying to get done.
Gotcha. So with that in mind, what are things we can do with our tonality and our body language to improve our influence on other people?
Well, in terms of tonality, you know, one of the easiest things that I'm doing right now is stand when you're speaking. If it's an important phone call, stand when you're talking. You're automatically going to have so much more energy and animation in your voice. And the other thing that I love is do important phone calls while you are looking in a mirror. Because it is impossible to look at yourself in the mirror and not amuse yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going to smile at yourself and you're so funny and you're so charming. So, and your voice is going to follow along with all of that.
Those are some great tips because I have a problem with phone calls personally. I don't know. I've always treated phone calls like it's a medium of communication. Just say what you got to say and get it done. And my wife's always reminding me, you need to like smile when you're talking. And don't have such this grouch face on you because like it reflects in your voice. You don't think it would, but it does.
It does. And I mean, I really do recommend for a lot of my clients, not because they're all indescribably narcissistic, but because it's helpful, is to have a mirror in your office. And if it's an important call, shut the door and, you know, talk to the mirror. So.
Okay. So yeah, this is great if you're doing a job interview or on the phone. Stand up and look in a mirror.
Yeah. In terms of the other things, in terms of physicality that you can do, it's a very small thing, but it's powerful, is we trust you when we can see your hands and we don't trust you when we can't. You know, which is why one of the first things they say to the, you know, alleged criminal is put your hands where I can see them. So, you know, if you're sitting again in a meeting where you're asking for money, or if you're in a job interview and you wish to appear trustworthy, just keep your hands on the table.
Okay. And what about just talking, you know, in just daily interactions, whether you're at a cocktail party, a networking event, a date, what are things you can do with your body language to, I don't know, put your best foot forward and maybe make people feel more comfortable and at ease around you?
You know, it's a really seemingly small thing, but how many times have you met somebody at anything and they say, I'm really happy to meet you? And I'm like, okay, well, you don't sound happy. So you haven't even gotten through how do you do? And you've already come across as insincere. So really and truly, when you meet somebody, take that time and connect. And, you know, if you're going to say you're happy about something, please sound happy about it.
Gotcha. And here's a question I have. Maybe you have the answer to this. I think you do. Whenever I'm doing public speaking or I'm in a meeting doing a presentation, I never know what to do with my hands. Right? Like, should I keep them in front of me? Should I move them around a lot, gesticulate? Should I hold something? If I'm at a party, like, what do I do with my hands if I don't have a drink? And I know I'm probably being overly self-conscious, but there's probably some things you can do to ease that amount of self-consciousness, right?
Yes. What it is you just want to get really committed to what it is that you are talking about. So, I mean, if you're completely caught up in the story that you're telling, you're not thinking about your hands. And, you know, it's the same way, you know, a lot of people hire me to get rid of the ums and things like that in their speech. But the same thing will happen if you're totally committed to what you're saying, those drop away naturally. So I guess what I would say is think less about your hands and more, again, just about really connecting both to the person or the audience that you're speaking to and to what it is that you're saying. And then, again, it's effortless. It drops away.
Gotcha.
You know, I mean, I'm sure if you're talking to your wife and you're telling a story about something that's made you crazy and then this happened and then that happened and then you are not thinking about what your hands are doing.
No, not.
So you want to get that committed.
So that's the key. It seems like storytelling is a key in your communication.
Storytelling is critical. Storytelling keeps you away from what's known in my business as useless modifiers. Like, you know, it's great, it's amazing, it's incredible, it's awesome. And nothing happens in my brain when you say that. You know, are you talking about your cell phone? Are you talking about your sandwich? nothing. So, but if you tell me a story about why something is, then automatically it's more memorable and more interesting. You know, and again, this works, you know, if I have a client who's talking about their product, or if you're in a job interview. You know, a common job interview question is, you know, tell me about your greatest strength. And, you know, nobody's going to remember, well, I'm just a really great leader. I'm just a really awesome leader. I really love to lead. Nothing. No. You know, it has to be, there was this time and this occurred and this was the situation and this is how I took charge of it and this was the outcome and yay for me. And that's, you know, that's a story that your listener can repeat. So you really, you just have to have, you know, they don't, I don't want them to be long. Please don't make them long, very short, but stories will help you.
Okay. So yeah, not even, and don't even use stories for job things, but also like have some stories lined up that you could tell in just casual social encounters as well.
Absolutely. You know, one of my things is if you're in a casual social, a lot of times people will introduce, you'll introduce two people and you'll say, oh my God, you guys are going to love each other. Okay. Now the two people are just looking at you like they have nowhere to go with that, right? Okay. Because maybe they're not feeling it. They're not feeling the love. So, but if you say, this is so-and-so, he and I met when X occurred, and this is so-and-so, and she and I met when, you know, Y occurred, and both of you, you know, did the following, and now they have common ground. So it's just a much better way to make an introduction.
Okay. And you kind of hit on this a little bit about the words we say. So according to the UCLA study, 7% of what we say contributes to overall persuasion. But there are some things we should avoid saying. So you mentioned the ums and the uhs. We try to reduce that. And then we talked about these useless modifiers. If those are words we should avoid to be persuasive, what are some words we should include to build rapport and be more persuasive with the people we interact with?
Well, Yale University did a study of the 12 most persuasive words in the English language, and the most persuasive word in the English language is you. So the more that you can, when you're talking to people, be like, as I'm sure you know, as I'm sure you've heard, when I was talking about you today, and just putting everything in that context, because at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter who you are, and it is, you know, part of my job to tell, you know, people who think they're incredibly important, that no one cares about them. Nobody cares about you. What they care about is themselves and how you are going to make their life better. So if you're walking in and saying, I wanted to talk to you today, blah, blah, because this and this and this, then all of a sudden people's ears, you know, they perk up. The other study that I talk about a lot is Ellen Langer, who's a social psychologist out of Harvard, did a study that showed that there's one word that increases the possibility of cooperation from 60 to 94%. And that word is because. So I wanted to talk to you today because. Giving people, again, the because behind any request that you're making. Look, why are you making me sit through this? You need to articulate that. So, yes.
I think I've seen that study about the because, and it was kind of bizarre because it was the experiment was, if I'm correct, if I'm remembering correctly, it was they asked someone to cut in front of a copy line, like get into the front and say, the one person said, I need to, can I cut in front of you? And everyone said, no, of course you can't, like wait in line. But if people just said because and like some random reason, didn't even be connected to anything, like people complied. Like you can say, because I need to, can I cut in front of you because I have to make tea in 5 minutes? People are like, okay.
This is what I always, you know, again, I tell my clients, if someone cuts the line at the grocery store, you're pissed off. But if they say, do you mind if I cut the line because I'm late to pick up my kids at school? You're going to let the line cut go. You'll still be pissed about it, but you'll let it go. So, yeah.
So, yeah, have a reason. So, use you.
Yeah, you and because, you are, and because are very important.
We're going to take a quick break for your word from our sponsors. All right, so one of the most versatile pieces of clothing you can have in your fall winter wardrobe is a nice pair of dress boots. But the problem with dress boots is you're going to spend $400, $500 for a pair. It's really nice, but it's a lot of money. Or you spend less money, but the quality of the boot goes down. Well, Thursday Boots solves this problem. The boots are handcrafted with some of the best leather around. Goodyear welt construction, glove leather interior lining. They're really, really comfortable. And they have different types. They have a dress boot. They have a chukka boot. I've been wearing the chukka boot a lot lately. In fact, I got them on right now. really, really comfortable pair of boots and well-made. And what's best of all with Thursday Boots, the prices start at $149. That's right, $149. You get free shipping and returns. So if you want to check out some of my favorite boots at Thursday Boot Company, go to thursdayboots.com/AOM. Also by lynda.com. Well, here's another gift idea. Instead of giving someone stuff, give them some knowledge, something that they can use for the rest of their lives. And you can do that at lynda.com. Lynda.com is an online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. Like I said, they have courses on pretty much anything you ever want to take. Photography and videography, I've done those for to help with my business. They have productivity, business management. They have web development, app development. So if you know someone who has been wanting to start a business, but they just haven't taken those steps, well, nudge them along by gifting them a subscription to lynda.com. So if you're interested in checking this out, you can start off with a free 10-day trial and have access to all of lynda.com's courses by going to lynda.com/artofman. That's lynda.com/artofman. So I think one thing that people often feel self-conscious about is introducing themselves, whether it's their first day at the job or at a networking event or a conference. What's the best way to introduce yourself that will leave a lasting impression, yet at the same time doesn't feel like, you know, the stereotypical elevator pitch where you know, it sounds like you memorize this and you're just trying to get your pitch into me. How can you introduce yourself but be more memorable?
Again, it's about telling a story about why is what you're talking about going to make the other person's life better? So if I were to say to you, oh my God, I have the most amazing book. It's such a wonderful book. I wrote it. It took me this amount of months to write it. And, you know, this is, my agent said this about it. My nanny said this about it. And you're thinking to yourself, I don't care. Right. But if I say to you, you know what, I wrote a book and I know that right now you have a new business and part of the work of your new business is finding new clients. So what I'm hoping is that I have a few techniques up my sleeve that might be useful to you. And I wrote them down in a book. So, you know, you want to back end it with what's important to you. And you want to front load it with why the other person should care.
Okay, and couched in a story. It sounds like you're telling a story.
Yes, and the story is about the person you're talking to. The story is not about yourself.
Yeah, you had this great line. I've been thinking about it more and more, is that everyone's a hero in their own world.
Right.
Right. And so like you got to think about that when you're talking to people. It's like, let them try to figure out how is what I have to offer going to help them advance in their own hero's journey.
Right. Yeah, Mike Myers, I actually pulled that from Mike Myers during an actor Inside the Actor's Studio interview. He said, every villain is the hero of his own story. So even if someone, what someone is doing is completely incomprehensible to you, if you can just try to figure out, okay, as crazy as it seems, they think they're on the side of right and order. And, you know, and speak into that a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good reminder, because I often think I do this too. Whenever someone does something just absolutely nuts, you think, well, they're just doing this because they know it's wrong, but they're still doing it.
Right.
But no, they think what they're absolutely doing is right, correct, etc. Well, here's the question. This leads to another question. How do you unawkwardly correct people when you know they might be wrong, they may have misspoken, or they're doing something that might be incorrect. This happens, this probably comes up at work all the time. Someone doesn't follow protocol, or they're just being unintentionally annoying or whatever. How can you unawkwardly correct them without making hard feelings a thing?
I think the first thing to do is double check your own hearing and your own perception. So that's a really easy way to do it. So if somebody says something preposterous, you just say, okay, hang on a sec. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding you correctly. What I thought I heard you say is X. And sometimes when they hear you say it out loud, they realize that's not right. So that's an easy way to do it. And they're like, no, you misunderstood me. If you say it again and they say, oh, yes, that's exactly what I want you to do, you always want to take the onus on yourself. You want to say, okay, so I'm going to, it sounds a little bit like I'm quibbling with you, but it was my understanding that the goal today was X. And I'm unclear on how this is going to help us accomplish that. So again, you know, it's not because you're difficult or argumentative, you're just confused and you're trying to arrive at a solution. But just to keep circling back and trying to get the other person, if they can, to dig a little bit deeper into, okay, but what is the intention for the day? Because sometimes people do have the same goal. They just have very, very different ways of getting there. Another simple, useful, you know, some incredibly useful question is if someone's doing something that just makes your head explode, before you correct them, you can say, can you tell me why you're doing it that way? Because they might have a reason that you haven't thought of, you know, so that's yay. Or they might not understand what it is you're trying to achieve. And then that's you've at least honored their process by inquiring first. If they have a process, does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. After I read that could have come in handy before, a couple of weeks ago. I have one of my editors works for me, and he did something, and I just completely was like, why did he do that? And I didn't ask him that. I was like, that's wrong. You need to do it this way. And he very tactfully responded, you know, this is why I did it. He explained what his reasoning, it was like completely valid. And I was like, that makes perfect sense. I think I could have avoided that whole awkward, it's kind of awkward, not too awkward. We're over it now. You know, we're not holding grudges. But if I just said, can you tell me like why you did it this way? And that would have solved a lot of this.
The other thing that I like people to keep in their back pocket is what I refer to as the Apollo 13 theory, which is, if you've seen the movie, one of the first questions that's asked after they've realized that, you know, something has occurred is, okay, what's working? What have we got to work with? What do I like? So if someone is doing something and you need it to change, very often if you begin with, all right, so here's what I love about what's happened in the past. You do this really well, you do that really well. I love this, this is great. Here's one thing that's going to need to change. But because, again, you front-loaded it with all the things that are working and that make you happy, they can hear your request very differently.
Gotcha. And this sounds very similar to the improvisation rule of yes and.
Yes and, yes. I love that. Yeah. Everybody should go take an improvisation class, even if it's like the most hideously awkward hour or two of your life. You're going to walk out with so much good information.
Yeah, I've heard that. I want to do it. I every time I read about improvisation, like, I need to do that, but I never follow
it's through. It's really, again, it's not something I loved, but I'm glad I put myself through it.
Yeah. So with the yes and rule, for those who aren't familiar with it, it's instead of an improvisation, instead of denying what someone's done, right? You're like, I'm not going to follow along with this. You say, you take what they've done and then you add your own spin to it.
That's also very helpful. It's something that I want people to think about. If you're in a meeting with a fellow team member and he or she says something that is like somehow not exactly correct, and but you don't want to be seen as contradicting them or arguing with them. So, because you're presenting to, you know, other people. So if you could say, if I could add to what, you know, Joe just said, and even if what you say directly contradicts what Joe just said, energetically, it comes across for other people as if you and Joe are one big happy family. So.
There you go. Well, on a related topic, related, similar to awkward conversations, but how are you supposed to handle, what's the best way? And I'm sure you deal with this all the time because you're prepping people for television appearances, but this can happen to people in the job interviews, but how do you deal with awkward questions, tough questions that you don't, if you answer it in a certain way, it's going to come off really, really bad. How do you deal with those really hard questions like that?
The first thing to do is before any meeting or job interview, you have to consider, what are the worst three questions I'm going to get? All right, let's think of what is, if everything goes down the tubes. You got to think through those three questions. You know, what I always tell my clients is hope is not a strategy, right? It's not like, oh God, I hope that doesn't come up. It's coming up. So think them through ahead of time. Then when you get the hideously awkward question, you know, what happens is that sometimes we're so nervous that we jump into answering it without taking a breath. So inhale and speak on an exhalation. Speaking on an exhalation automatically gives your voice so much more resonance and authority. You know, if you ask me something hideous or, and I go, well, and all of a sudden I sound a little crazy. But if I pause and I say, well, and now all of a sudden I seem like I'm in control. And then the other thing is that I recommend if someone asks you something and your mind goes blank, to just say, I'd like to think about that for a second because I want to be sure to give you the best answer possible. Nobody leaves a meeting or a job interview thinking, oh, I can't believe that guy that wanted to give me the best answer possible. What a jerk, you know? So that's your out. And then take that moment and think about it. So, but take your time.
Take your time. All right. Don't get flustered.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, related to the job interview, one of the tough questions that often comes up for folks is that, say, for example, they've been out of work for a while, or maybe they've jumped jobs several times. And that always raises red flags for potential employers. How do you answer those questions when they do come up about employment history?
Well, there are a couple of things. If, you know, if you sit down with your interviewer and, you know, very often they say to you, okay, well, where shall we start? My recommendation is if you have a resume that's a little bit quirky, then you say, you know what? I think that if you look at my resume, you'll see that I've moved around a lot in the past few years. So why don't we start there?
So take control of it and go to that. Okay.
You want to be on offense rather than on defense. Okay. Because right there, it doesn't matter what you do after that. Your interviewer's like, wow, hang on. This guy's got nerves of steel. So, and then from there, you want to have actually a pretty, you know, a good story about what happened. Maybe you jumped around because you wanted to be challenged. And the jobs that you had in the past weren't asking you to grow. So that's one way to tell that story. Maybe, you know, you were downsized. That certainly occurs. What you talk about at that point is I use the time to brush up on skill sets that I'm going to need once you hire me. So there always is a way to talk about your past. And it's about you sounding confident with the way you're going to talk about it and you feeling in control of that story. And what I always tell people is if you can't figure it out, honestly, just give me a call and I will figure it out because I'm really good at this. So, yeah.
So, but I guess you'd never want to say I jumped jobs because all my bosses were jerks. That probably would not be. Okay.
Yeah. No. You weren't challenged. Because, you know, you really wanted to, you know, you have X skill set and you didn't feel it was being utilized. And by the way, I noticed it's something that you require at this new job for which I am now interviewing. So you just present that as, you know, this is a gift with purchase that's going to make me even more desirable to you. But no, you can never, ever, 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 ever badmouth your past employer.
Okay.
It's like going on a date and hearing them bitch about their. Oh, sorry, but telling them.
You can say that. No, this is, we're not on the public airwaves. So
hearing them speak about badly about their last relationship, you're the only one who ends up sounding, you know, not great.
Terrible. And they're probably thinking in their head, it's like this. It's probably this. It's not the boss. It's like this person's actually
right.
Got the problem. Okay. Well, anything else that people can do to prep for a job interview so they really wow the interviewer? So yeah, come up with those three questions that are really difficult, prep for them. What else should they do to prep for their job interview?
A couple of things. You need to be aware of the trick questions, the trick statements. One of those, it seems so innocuous, is, so tell me about yourself.
I hate that question.
Right?
Yeah.
This is not an opportunity to talk about yourself. All right. No one wants to know, like, I'm the youngest of six and I grew up in Rhode Island. No. All right. This is about your job description states that you're looking for somebody who can do, you know, X. Not only can I do X, but I can also do Y and Z. So again, this is about how you are going to add value once you're hired. That's the answer to that one.
Okay.
The other thing I'm warning people about right now is a lot of HR people are stopping interviews halfway through and saying to the interviewee, you know what? I just don't think you're the right fit for this job.
Wow.
Whether they think so or not, they're doing this and they're doing it to see how you handle pressure and if you crack. Because what the HR people are telling me is it's amazing how many people will say at that moment, well, I didn't really think I was a good fit, but I just thought I'd come in. Okay. No. So you really need to, if somebody says that, be like, well, oh, okay. I guess I'm not making it clear how passionate I am about getting this position. So let me take you through my thinking one more time. But yeah, so you know, there are a number of pitfalls that that people should be aware of right now.
Wow.
The other thing I heard from a guy who hires all the time for sales jobs is he doesn't call you back until you called him three times. Because if you can't take rejection in the interview process, you're not going to do well as a salesperson.
Wow.
So yeah,
all right. This is like some like crazy like mind like psychological.
There's so much mind stuff.
Mind stuff going on. All right, so keep that in mind. Don't crack, and don't succumb to the pressure. Okay, great stuff. Well, let's shift back to presenting yourself. And you had a section on clothing, and I know you know clothes don't make the man, right? But they do play a part in how persuasive or influential we are. So what should people be aware of on how they should change their wardrobe maybe or their, what they wear depending on the audience that they're presenting to?
I think that's the critical piece is you really need to think about the audience you're speaking to. You know, I completely costume change depending on who my client is. Some of my clients really need to see me in a suit and high heels with a, like, you know, a pocketbook that costs as much as a used car. That makes them feel so much better. And then some of my clients, that makes them feel very tense. And they think that all the money that they pay me is going to subsidize my wardrobe. So I have to, you know, do these kind of Superman changes as I move through the day. So it's thinking through, who it is that you're talking to, what is their value? What are their values? And how can you read, you know, visually as though, you know, you're already a member of the team. But just as a general rule of thumb, you know, blue is the color that we trust the most and it photographs best. So I have a lot of clothes in different shades of blue. And of those, that kind of a cornflower or a French blue is the one that really, really looks well. And again, traffic court or television, it's going to serve you well. And then, you know, really thanks to all the different kinds of ability to videotape yourself ahead of time. If it's an important meeting, take a picture of yourself and take a look at what you look like, because sometimes you just have no idea. So get that organized. I also always prefer tailored things. I think people are rarely upset if you're overdressed and they're somewhat upset if you're underdressed. So.
Yeah. And the tailored clothing, particularly for men, a well-tailored suit will really accentuate features that, exude dominance in a powerful, and I'm not talking about like in a mean way, but like.
Well, it shows an attention to detail.
Yeah.
You know, if you come in and you look like you slept in your clothes, that's disquieting to the people, you know, that are sitting across from you. But I think, you know, even for women as well, I have one client who is a financial wizard, and that's great. But she kept going on TV wearing like a scooped neck t-shirt underneath her blazer. But on television, it looked like she was wearing a leotard. And no one wants to take financial advice from somebody wearing a leotard. So that was, you know, we had to get that organized. So yeah.
There's that commercial I've seen about the power of like how you present yourself. Like it's like for like personal, it's like a investment commercial where they took like this DJ that had dreadlocks and he had goggles and he's wearing like, you know, the typical DJ outfit, and they cleaned him up, put a suit on, and people, he knew nothing about investments, but like he sat down with people who were interested in investing and he gave the presentation and people were like, oh yeah, I really trust this guy. And it was just because he put on a suit and he got a haircut.
It's an astonishing thing. And you know, a lot of people will say, well, that's so sad and that's awful. And you're asking me not to be my authentic self. You know, what I always say is you can be yourself, you can let your freak flag fly once you have the job or once you've made the deal. But at the moment, let's stay focused on the objective. Get the job, sign the deal, and then, you know, you can do what it is that you want or need to do to express your authentic self.
Okay. I like that. So this day and age, I get this request a lot, and I've done it too before, is requesting to meet people for coffee or for lunch, to either discuss, do an informational interview or even maybe make a pitch. What can people do to make these, they're informal. They seem very informal because it's just, we're going to get coffee, but you make the case that you should do a lot of prep work even for these very informal meetings. So what can people do to make, coffee meetings or lunch meetings more effective?
You're never off duty. So yes, don't be fooled by thinking, you know, it's just coffee or it's just lunch. No. Frankly, honestly, if you want to get someone's attention and get in to see them, I never suggest coffee or lunch. The first thing I say is, can I come in for 15 minutes at the beginning or end of your day? Because the minute you put an estimated running time on it of 15 minutes, the person's like, oh, okay, that doesn't sound too onerous. But if you say to somebody, let me take you out for lunch, and they're busy, now that just sounds exhausting and like it's going to suck away my afternoon. So honestly, you'll get in to see people a lot more quickly. And then, you know, frankly, they're going to let you talk longer than 15 minutes. But that's honestly my first way to get past a gatekeeper. If you are in a social situation, if you are, you know, having coffee or lunch with someone, you know, we all know at this point that you're not supposed to pick up your handheld device during the course of what's occurring. Although, you know, you'd be surprised how many people do. But my rule of thumb is you are presenting from three blocks away, because you simply don't know if the other person is watching you. You know, if I've had people tell me, a CEO tell me that he was sitting in his office, he looked out the window, he watched a woman get out of her car, brush her hair in the parking lot, and then proceed into the meeting. And he thought, I can't hire her because I can't have her representing my company if she does her personal grooming in a public place. So that's rule one, is you're presenting from 3 blocks away or 3 miles away or from the time you step out of your car. After that, it's really just a matter of following those, you know, those kind of kooky rules of etiquette that your mother and father, you know, maybe brought up once or twice over the dinner table. You know, napkin in your lap, sit up straight, say please and thank you, let the other person order first. You know, my own personal rule of thumb is don't order food that's difficult to manage. You know, nobody wants to see you playing cat's cradle with the cheese on the onion soup. It makes people tense. So pick things that you're going to be able to focus on the conversation. Unless, you know, the other thing that I'm a little bit uptight about is unless your eating habits are the focus of the meal, Like, don't talk about your paleo. Don't talk about your sugar fears. Don't talk about your gluten intolerant. No, 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 no. Let the other person talk about it all they want. But yeah.
Yeah. Don't bring that. But yeah, people love bringing that stuff up.
It's amazing how many people guess.
Yeah, so. How do you know if there's like, that's an old joke. How do you know if someone's a paleo guy or a vegan guy? It's like, they'll tell you.
Yeah. I believe that.
I believe it. All right. Well, let's listen on this question. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who are listening to this. This is great. These are some great bits of advice. But what do I do if I'm shy? Right. And I have a hard time asserting myself, even in a job interview in the workplace or being socially engaging at a cocktail party. Any advice for people who have that sort of that social anxiety that just prevents them from even putting these tips into practice?
Again, it sounds incredibly simplistic / mundane, but you really do have to pick three small talk topics. And, you know, it just anything to get the ball rolling. So say you're walking into a networking event. You know, it's as simple as saying to somebody, gosh, how did you hear about this organization? Well, now they get to talk about themselves for the next few minutes. So they're going to like you better, right?
Yeah.
So figure out those kinds of things. And, you know, with meetings, it's the same thing. You really do have to pick three small talk topics ahead of time because you can have a great meeting or job interview and then be standing by the elevator and just pick a topic out of thin air, and you're a little bit tired, and what you can just watch the whole thing blow up in your face. So you've got to have that in your back pocket. So it's as small as, gosh, do you recommend any restaurants around here? I'm thinking about going out for dinner afterward. Again, give other people the chance to be the authority and give other people the chance to talk about themselves, and they are going to like you without you having to do very much at all.
So make it about, again, it's going, make it about the person.
Yeah.
And it takes the onus off of you.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Well, friends, this has been a great conversation. Where can people learn more about your work and what you do?
I have a website, which is my name, francescolejones.com. And on the website, there's, you know, all kinds of information. I've written 3 books and I write a weekly blog, so come on over. And then the other thing that's there is I put an ask a question button on my site, and it rolls, honestly, all the questions I get roll directly to my phone, and I will respond. So, you know, if you have a meeting or a job interview or anything coming up and you feel like I might be able to be helpful, please send me a note about it, because this is what I love to do, and I'm happy to get back to you and help you figure things out.
That's awesome. Well, Frances Cole Jones, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
My guest today was Frances Cole Jones. She's the author of the book, How to Wow, and you can find that on Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere. And for more information about Frances' work, go to francescolejones.com, all one word. And like she said, you can actually ask her a question about any aspect of personal influence on her site, so you can check that out as well. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. For more manly tips and advice, make sure to check out the Art of Manliness website at artofmanliness.com. And if you enjoy this podcast, I'd really appreciate it if you give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. Also, tell your friends about us. I'd really appreciate that. Always, I thank you for your support. And until the next time, this is Brett McKay telling you to stay manly.